Feeding the Flame by Tuesday Love Sangrampa, read for you by Blue Friend. Chapter 6. Time is the most valuable thing a man can spend. The old man was in his new bed, the new hospital bed with the motor, which lifted the headpiece up and down, and which, by pressing a button, adjusted the height of the bed. Up and down he went, playing with the thing, somewhat like a child with a new toy, perhaps, but it's not so easy when one cannot get about at all, when one has to lie in bed, a bed which is so low that one is prevented from even looking out of the window. Now the old man had a bed, the height of which could be adjusted by an electric motor. He thought of himself as a submarine surfacing for a look at the world. "Hey," yelled Miss Cleopatra, "how the heck do you think we're going to jump on the bed if you keep altering the height like that? How do you think we can judge our distance?" The old man came back to the present with quite a jerk, and hastily set the bed to go to its lowest. Miss Cleopatra jumped up and stood on the old man's chest, full of indignation. "Are you trying to get rid of me?" she asked. "Do you want to make it difficult so I can't come and stand on your chest, hey?" "No, of course not, Cleo," replied the old man. "But just think, if you stood up here on my chest, you can look over that stupid balcony outside our window, and you can see the ships in the harbor." Together they lay there, looking out over the harbor. Closest was a ship unloading nickel ore. Beyond that was a Russian ship, very deep in the water astern, but with the bows well out, showing that all the forepart had yet to be loaded. A little farther, two berths farther on, actually, a South Korean ship was loading wood pulp for Korea. "Don't know why they want to come here for wood pulp," said the old man. "There's plenty of trees in South Korea." "Oh, well," said Buttercup, "probably they want to do a barter or something, and they want to buy wood pulp from Canada in exchange for something else." Buttercup was definitely the expert when it came to ships and shipping. Buttercup was a specialist when it came to ships' flags. The unusual South Korean flag defeated her for just a few moments, but anything else, Panama, Monrovia, even the old red ensign, she could distinguish it miles away. Miss Teddy looked up. "What are you doing, Gov?" she asked in a rather puzzled fashion. "Have you got so sick that you're talking to yourself?" "No, of course I'm not talking to myself. I'm just making some notes for a book." "Can't I make some notes? Can't I speak without you interfering, Teddykins?" Teddykins shook her head in puzzled amazement, and then curled up in a nice compact ball and dropped off to sleep again. Suddenly Miss Cleo's ears pricked up, and Teddy jerked to full awareness. Outside, a strident voice came. "Well, I looked in the papers today and I saw my horoscope wasn't so good. So I thought to myself, if you didn't have a job to do, old girl, you'd be better staying off and being in bed. But you can't do that when you gotta earn a living, when you got her man to keep, can you?" The voice passed on, accompanied by the mumble of some other woman, probably belching out some drivel about her own troubles. Yes, said the old man, "that reminds me. That's a question which I had here. Let me see, where is it?" He riffled through a pile of papers and triumphantly came up with the desired one. Postmark, well, somewhere in one of the far islands. Subject, what is it? Dear Sir, I enclose a dollar and my birth date. Please send me a full horoscope and life reading immediately, and send it to me by return airmail. If there's any change, keep it for someone who didn't send a postal charge. Now, what do you think of that? Someone thinks that horoscopes grow on trees. They're not so easy as that. It takes time. But here's another question. What do you really think of horoscopes? Do all these people who advertise do it for a racket? A horoscope has never been right for me. What's the truth of it all? Well, the truth of astrology is this. Given the right conditions, astrology can be completely accurate and successful, given the right conditions. Let me first of all warn you against all this run-of-the-mill advertising, offering to do your horoscope for a couple of dollars or a few shillings. What you get is a few printed pieces of paper which purport to be a horoscope. But that stuff is hardly worth putting out for garbage, and in my considered opinion, the same can be said for all this rot, which is alleged to come from computers. It just isn't worth the money. Astrology is not just a mechanical process. Astrology is a science and an art. One cannot do it altogether by science. Art is necessary. And one cannot do it altogether by art because science is necessary. To do a horoscope properly, really accurately, that is, it is necessary to have the precise time of birth and the actual location of birth. Then it's necessary to spend many days working out various aspects, etc. It cannot be done successfully for $5 or $10. What you get from that sort of thing is just a rough, very rough, guide, which can apply to thousands of different people. I will not do a horoscope for anyone for any price, because I do not believe in people having their horoscopes done. If people have a horoscope done, they feel that they just have to do everything the horoscope says. And a horoscope is not an absolutely cast-iron set of conditions. A horoscope is a set of possibilities. By knowing a person's astrological makeup, one can describe the person's appearance should be like, one can describe what the person's character should be like, and the horoscope sets the limits of what the person can be. For example, one person can have a certain horoscope which says he cannot rise above the station to which he was born, but that he can do certain things with immense effort. The second person could have a horoscope which says that he will rise above his station and he will progress very rapidly with hardly any effort at all. If you really want to know what the horoscope is like, consider it in this light. It is a specification, an informed guess of what a person's capabilities are. To make it clearer, let us take two cars. The horoscope of a Rolls-Royce car can say that the car will be very silent, very fast, very comfortable, that it will have a certain maximum speed and it will use so much gas every few miles. The horoscope of the second car, perhaps, are there still Morris Minors in England? We'll say that it is a low-powered car, very, very suitable for local jaunts, and that its maximum speed is such and such a figure, that it doesn't use much gas, and that it is a very nice little car for getting about in traffic. Well, people are like that. They have their specifications, only we call them horoscopes. A horoscope will not tell the eager young lady, you know, the one who is anxious to get a husband in a hurry, that she will go out and meet Mr. Wright under the third lamppost as she turns to the left or to the right, or that she will meet a dark-haired young man who is busy tying his shoelaces and it will be love at first sight. That's not horoscopes at all. That's not real astrology. That's fake fortune-telling. There are very, very few really genuine, really capable astrologers advertising. They don't have to advertise. Their fame, their accuracy, is passed on by word of mouth. And if you think you can fill in a coupon and send it off with 50 cents or 5 shillings and get a life reading, well, think again, for you are one of the gullible ones who really deserve to be caught in the sucker trap for thinking that you can get something so cheaply. You only get what you pay for. I will not do horoscopes for any sum of money. If I do them, I do them for free, under very special circumstances. But in my considered opinion, no horoscope, which costs less than $100, is worth having because it means that the person who did the horoscope just did not spend enough time and take enough trouble. So all you have is just a few marks on a piece of paper. In my own case, my past was foretold by astrology with utterly stupendous accuracy. Everything that was foretold about me has happened. Sadly enough, a few things extra have happened, a few things which the astrologer didn't get around to discussing, and all the wretched extras were bad things too. To answer a question then, is astrology genuine? I will say yes. Astrology can be very genuine. It can suggest what a person's life will be like. It can indicate probabilities, but they are probabilities only. So do not take astrology too seriously unless you get an absolute gem of an astrologer who knows exactly what he's doing and who is completely ethical. That is, one who tells you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So many people, so many astrologers, have their information and put in quite a few stock paragraphs because they know what people want to hear. Now, here's another one. My daughter's husband is a very strange sort of man. He doesn't believe in the same things as those in which I believe. He doesn't believe in occult things. What can I do to make him believe? The only answer that one can give here is to state most definitely that nothing can be done to help in the way in which the lady means. If a person is not yet ready to study occult subjects, then it's definitely wrong to try to force occult things at him. Everyone has a right to free choice, and whichever choice they make is entirely their own affair and their own responsibility. If Billy Bugsbottom decides that occult stuff is all a lot of hogwash, then why should one try to persuade Billy Bugsbottom anything different? It's his belief and his choice, and it is definitely wrong to influence a person. There are so many people who write in asking how they can do a mantra to compel some poor wretch to do something which they would just hate to do. And I repeat ad nauseam that it is wrong to influence another person. Perhaps the person has some definite reason for not wanting to study astrology or occultism or how to play snakes and ladders. In the same way, it is quite wrong to expect a person to agree with us in everything we do. You should hear how Buttercup and I agree to differ. There are many things which I know from actual experience to be fact, but Buttercup is entitled to her own opinion, and if my beliefs are not always her beliefs, that is her choice, and I do not influence her at all. The crummy press often print articles saying that Buttercup is a disciple of mine. They couldn't be farther from the truth. She's not a disciple of mine, nor is she a Buddhist. To start with, I have no disciples and never have had any. And secondly, I believe it is wrong for people to switch sides and become a Buddhist when they really want to be a Christian, or a Christian when they really want to be a Buddhist. Being a bit biased on the matter, I always say that when a person is ready, they will become a Buddhist automatically, because the real Buddhism just means obeying the law of doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Of course, I'm not meaning some of these peculiar cults in England and in the USA who now call themselves Buddhist temples. That is not my idea of Buddhism at all. The real Buddhist doesn't have to go out and get converts. And I am a real Buddhist. While on the subject of astrology, because we are more or less, let us have a look at two other systems. Now, graphology, which is the science of reading character from handwriting, is a thing which I thoroughly endorse when done by an expert. Graphology is not fortune telling. It is, instead, a most accurate method of determining a person's character, potentialities, and all the rest of that. Of course, one has to be an expert at such things. Too many beginners or outright fakes base their conclusions on just one or two points in the handwriting. But one has to have about 7 confirmations before one can say, with absolute certainty, without any fear of contradiction at all, that this is so or that is so. Handwriting tells character and ability and all of that. It is not in any way possible to forecast the future from handwriting, and no reputable graphologist ever claims that it is. The ideal use for graphology is in assessing a person's ability for a certain job. Some years ago, Ma, to whom we now refer as Rab, did graphology for certain industrial firms, and she did it successfully. Firms would supply her with the handwriting of people who applied to the firm for employment, and then Rab would quite accurately suggest which applicant was the most suitable and give an assessment of his character and abilities. Oh, by the way, perhaps I should say how Ma has suddenly become Rab. Well, the cats thought that the first name, Ma, would remind people too much of Dinah Dripdry's Ma, the char lady, and so we used instead a name which she used in a previous life, Rab. This is one of my infamous digressions, by the way, Never mind, it's better to have a digression than no book. Or don't you think so? In this particular book, there are going to be many digressions and there are going to be many repetitions. I have been looking through a whole series of questions, and I see that it's quite essential to have repetitions, even if one or two of you do not like it. So you are being warned now that there will be a few repetitions. I can safely warn you now that you are so far into the book, and I hope have bought the book instead of borrowing it from some library. A poor wretched author doesn't get any royalties on books supplied to a library, you know. And every book from the library shelves is a loss of income. That is, a loss of food to the author. People write to me and tell me that they have read parts of my books in a public library, and now would I please tell them the answers to a lot of questions. Or if I will send them a complete set of my books, each autographed and with a photograph of me, and they will try to find some time to read the books. Hopeful little souls, aren't they? So, now that you've got so far and presumably have bought this book, let me say that yes, there's going to be a few repetitions, but it's all in a good cause. I hope repetition will enable you to get all this into your subconscious. You had to practice repetition before you could do the multiplication tables, and I'm trying to do something for you, help you by placing this knowledge into your subconscious. There are many firms who choose applicants largely on the basis of handwriting, and so it's to your own interest to brush up on your handwriting. You might get a better job or more money that way. You might also get an assessment of character from a good graphologist, because that will help you to overcome any weakness in character and to strengthen those which are already strong. But never, never believe that you can have your fortune told from your handwriting. You cannot. One of the original systems for telling a person's past, present, and future is by palmistry, reading all those queer marks on the palm. Again, if one really knows how to do it, it's just about infallible. In brief, and assuming that you are right-handed, then your left hand would indicate what you plan to do in this life, and it will indicate the equipment with which you came. That is, are you artistic? Are you a plodder? Are you quick-tempered or stolid? The left hand tells what one planned, but the right hand shows what one has actually achieved up to date. The average practitioner can give quite a good assessment of character from the lines of the hands and fingers. But it needs to be a far more than average practitioner to be able to tell truthfully of the past life and the probabilities for the future. Now let me stress that point again, the probabilities. There is nothing on this earth that can say definitely and incontrovertibly what will happen to a person. There is no science, no art, no skill, no device which will say what is going to happen to a person beyond any shadow of doubt. Truthful practitioners will admit that they can only tell probabilities. Take, by way of example, some poor fellow who falls out of a plane without a parachute. Well, anyone would be justified in saying that he is virtually dead as soon as he starts to fall, because as soon as he stops falling, there is a horrible splat, and he has left his mark on the earth. But wait a moment. He may not fall on something hard. There are quite a few cases of people falling out of airplanes and surviving to tell the tale, which they do. In my own case, I fell out of a plane when it was on fire. I fell about 1,000 feet, and I sustained very severe spinal injuries, which caused a certain amount of curvature of the spine. Other people have fallen safely. There was one poor fellow who fell out of a plane and hit a haystack, and his only real danger was the fear of being suffocated before watchers could get him out, dig him out from the bottom of the haystack. He got a bump or two and a king-size fright, but he was no worse off. Well, another well-known case happened in Switzerland. The pilot had to leave his plane, and he left without his parachute, it seems. And he fell through the cold Swiss air and landed in a deep snowdrift. His only danger was in freezing to death, and people had to dig frantically to get him out. His only trouble was feeling a bit chilly. So you see, any astrologer would have said that the fellow would meet his death in an air accident, because the probability would be there, but the actuality wasn't. If any soothsayer, clairvoyant, astrologer, palmist, etc., etc., tells you such a thing will definitely be, then just grab your money and run for it. You can be told probabilities, but always, always keep in mind that they are probabilities only and nothing more, nothing at all more. If you can keep your head and use a little bit of willpower and imagination, the probabilities can be overcome. There is a classic example of that. Do you know it? Well, Socrates, one of the very wise men, had his horoscope prepared, it seems, when he was a very young man. The horoscope indicated that he would be a most enthusiastic thug and murderer, and would engage in all forms of villainy with great elan. The young Socrates exclaimed to himself, the Greek equivalent of, "That's for the birds, I'm changing fast," and decided to do something about it. So he channeled all his energies into knowledge, into philosophical works, and now he is revered as one of the great sages. He has made his indelible mark on the pages of time, whereas if he'd just sat down under the weight of an unfavorable horoscope, he might have just left his imprint on the crook's calendar of crime. So there it is. Even if an astrologer or a palmist tells you something which frightens you enormously, remember, you can overcome it. You can always sidetrack bad things. By letters which I receive, I gather that most of you have the impression that authors, such as I, recline in plush splendor and have a whole gang of secretaries waiting with bated breath to hurry to do one's bidding. I gather that many of you think that an author, such as I, has a Rolls Royce knocking at the door, ready to take me out. It's not so. It's not so at all. Actually, I am reclining, in some discomfort, in a hospital type of bed, and at the moment, through disabilities, etc., I'm not able to type. So Buttercup the Benevolent is typing for me, as she has typed most of my books, and typed them well, too, by the way. But do you know what sort of questions I get? Admittedly, you know of some of them, but do you know about the questions which I do not normally answer? How would you, for example, answer this question? Tell us about such things as casting shadows through standing in sunlight. Question: is there really such a thing as distance, and is the globe really spheroid? Question: what is the meaning of write this and write that? Does that mean one should eat only with the right hand? That last question is quite sensible, you know. You might think that some sort of nut or kook sent it in, but if you think about it seriously, there is a lot of sense to it. What is the meaning of write this and write that? Well, we know all about doing things the right way and avoiding wrong. We know that it is right to do good instead of to do wrong, but do you know that our hands have polarity? One hand is positive and one hand is negative. If you read back a few paragraphs to where we dealt with palms, you will see that the left hand deals with the abstract, that is, things before we came to this earth, how we planned things, whereas the right hand is the practical hand, the hand which says how far we have achieved our objectives. In the same way, some of the Arabs of a few years ago had a very definite ruling about hands. The left hand was known as the dirty hand, and that hand could be used only for dirty tasks, such as dealing with certain aspects of one's toilet. But the right hand was the clean hand, and the one could only use the right hand when dealing with food. All foodstuff was touched with the right hand, although one could pick up a glass or a cup with the left hand. It would be quite interesting to investigate the matter further and see how much difference it made to one's digestion when one touched food with the right hand only, and then perhaps a month later touched food with the left hand only. The right hand is the correct hand for holding a dagger or sword or shaking hands with the person. In the old days, people used to carry a knife or dagger in the right hand as a means of warding off attackers, so that when they met a friend, they would extend the right hand to show that they had no knife hidden, to show that they came in friendship. And so we had the start of the custom of shaking hands. Shake a person's hand, and you can see that he's not holding a knife against his palm with his thumb, and if he has any weapons concealed in his sleeve, well, shake them out. From the same source, there's another question, and it is, how does the silver cord connect the physical and the overself and the astral at the same time? The silver cord, like everything else, is a vibration, which means that it's also a source of energy. The cord does not necessarily have to go to just one other object. That is, it is not limited to connecting body and soul together. Extensions can be taken from it in just the same way as you can have extensions taken from your telephone. If you have a telephone in your living room, then it's no great difficulty to have an extension in your bedroom. It is ordinary common sense to realize that the overself is the source of each person's energy, the source of each person's being. And the overself, you can say, has each human on a leash. So, just as you can have a dog on a leash, or you can have 10 dogs on leashes, so you can have an overself connected to an astral and to a physical body. There is really nothing to answer in that question except to say that if you have a dog, let us say it's a big dog, at the end of a leash, it is quite easy to connect a small dog to the leash of the big dog, and that would correspond to the overself, the astral, and the physical. I see here a question which actually we have already answered. Perhaps I'd better answer it again. The question is, how did the misconception occur that occultists cannot charge for their services? The answer is not far to seek. In the Far East, most people are desperately poor. They do not have televisions and cars and private aircraft and split-level homes. Sometimes they just have food and a few clothes. Sometimes people of the Far East do not see money during the whole of their lifetimes. Instead, they make their purchases by barter. They exchange produce, eggs and all that, or even labor, for the things which they want. So if a peasant wants the services of an occultist, the peasant will not think of giving money to the occultist because he doesn't have any. So instead, he will provide the occultist with food, grain, for example, or fruit. And again, if he doesn't have any eggs or grain or fruit to spare, then he will do work for the occultist, mend his robes, for example, carve a new bowl. If he had accommodation, then the peasant will clean his accommodations. It may be a cave in the hillside, and in that case, the person who has used the occultist's service will clean the cave so many times, will sweep up the old grass and strew the floor with fresh grass. He will provide firewood and will do all the necessary work. It's still payment, though, isn't it? If he gives food, if he gives labor, it's still payment. But actually, the warning against payment was a different matter altogether, because the warning is against unscrupulous Westerners who advertise services they cannot really perform and who are just out to make unreasonable charges. Some of the advertisements I have seen are truly too fantastic to be believed. It strikes me as most hilarious to think of a fellow packing his briefcase and perhaps an overnight case and dashing off into the astral to read somebody's Akashic record, always, of course, for a high fee. Such things are impossible. They're quite impossible, because there is a very strict occult law to the effect that no person can see the Akashic record of another person who is alive. If you want to know what happened 500 years ago, then that's a different matter. That's history, and you can consult the Akashic record in that case, just as you can go to film libraries and pick out historical films. But just as many things are classified nowadays, you cannot report the speed of a certain plane, or you cannot say how fast a certain shell goes. Well, in much the same way, you just cannot see or discuss the Akashic record of a living person. After all, the spirit world, you know, doesn't exist solely for some of these cranky advertisers. Think of that when you read of some of the advertisements, and have a laugh with me, won't you? End of chapter 6.